Hey everyone, welcome to Locked On Lakers for Friday. Brian Kamenetsky, Andy Kamenetsky. The dismantling of the Utah Jazz continues, but it doesn't look like any of those pieces beyond Patrick Beverley are coming to LA. Plus, is Russ going to come off the bench? That's next on Locked On Lakers.
You are Locked On Lakers, your daily Los Angeles Lakers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Thanks to everybody for making Locked On Lakers first listen of every day, Monday through Friday. No matter how or where you get your podcasts, it is always free. It is never behind a paywall. Locked On Lakers on YouTube is where you go to see the show. You get to, in general, get it a little bit earlier than the audio product. We are, Andy, did we get there? No, we're not there yet. We are not there yet. I just looked it up. We are so close to 8,000 subscribers. Be the person who pushes us past 8,000, and you will have our unending gratitude. We can't offer a prize. I don't know how we'll even know it's you, but we would really appreciate it.
You'll know it's you, and that's what really matters.
Right. Bet Online, our friends at Bet Online, who this show, by the way, is brought to you by today. Today's episode is brought to you by Bet Online, which has you covered this season with more props, odds, and lines than ever before. Bet Online, where the games start. They've got a fascinating over-under setup regarding Russell Westbrook and the amount of games where he comes off the bench. So we are definitely going to get into that over the course of the show. But first, Andy, the big news of the day in the NBA, the Utah Jazz have finalized a trade or going to finalize a trade to send Bojan Bogdanović to the Pistons for Kelly Olynyk and Saben Lee. The important part here for the Lakers, obviously, and Lakers fans is that Bogdanović being traded to Detroit means he will not be traded to Los Angeles. Didn't seem likely that the, as you've been calling it, the poo-poo platter, any of it would end up in LA, but it looks like the poo-poo platter is not coming because Bogdanović is the only player that really made any sense to join the Lakers in, you know, anyway. Maybe Beasley, but mostly Bogdanović.
I mean, you had a lot of Laker fans, and I've even seen some people who cover the team say they could, that they thought these new Jazz players coming in, Jordan Clarkson, Mike Conley, Malik Beasley, Rudy Gay, some incarnation of them with Bojan Bogdanović could help the team through better depth, better fit, whatever. As I've made very clear all offseason, I don't think that at all. The only reason I think you could justify making these deals is if you just decided you would clean Utah's books for them, and therefore you would keep your first round picks, if no other reason than to attach them to some of the Jazz players that you would be looking to move this coming offseason. Look, with what's left right now, Jordan Clarkson and Mike Conley, they offer a lot of redundancy. They're very similar to the guards that you have. There's injury and age concerns with Conley, and you have money either guaranteed with Conley next offseason, $14.5 million, I believe, and what I think is going to be money guaranteed to Jordan Clarkson when he opts into the final year of his deal. So that's going to be filling up next season's cap space. So unless you love Malik Beasley, the Utah scenarios left over right now, those are the worst of all worlds for the Lakers, I think, moving forward.
Yeah, it's there's no question. And look, I like Jordan Clarkson. I think he is a good NBA player. He's got value on teams, whatever. Jordan Clarkson's not, you know, even anywhere close to what the Lakers would need to push themselves in. I like Malik Beasley. Malik Beasley and Jordan Clarkson are very similar players.
Which would make them fit in with this roster because they're like half the roster.
Right, because I have too many of one thing seems to be the theme. And I'm sorry, and you and I have been as big a fans of Mike Conley as they're, you know, around just over the course of his career, just the guy, the player, perpetually underrated, whatever. At this point, he's not underrated. He's a solid player, whatever. But how many 6 foot one guards, 6 foot guards can a team have? That is not a question that I want to see them aggressively try to answer. So it just doesn't make any sense. And none of that stuff is worth first round pick. Like
much less two.
Well, certainly not two. And, you know, the components of those salaries, because you know, one of the options, we're going to get into this because I think there's still a little bit more left to talk about from Thursday's show in terms of the choices facing the Lakers after they have, at least for now, passed on the Indiana deal. You have to, assets that you acquire in terms of trade pieces, in terms of stuff like that, only matter if it's stuff that people want. I don't mean stuff that people want in terms of a first round pick or like you get great. They have to be willing to take these players happily on their roster. And like you said, it doesn't do you any good to acquire Jordan Clarkson or Malik Beasley or whoever it might be and preserve your first round picks if you end up having to use those first round picks to unload Jordan Clarkson, Malik Beasley, or Mike Conley.
At that point, you are, as our friend Bomani Jones says, just hustling backwards. I mean, you're not doing anything.
No.
Like, it's funny too. Like, I've seen a lot of Laker fans, you know, because there had been some, I think, you know, legitimate consensus from people who are more dialed into this stuff than you or I are that Bojan Bogdanović, for example, could fetch a first round pick because he is a legitimately great shooter when he's right. healthy.
On an expiring contract, right. Solid guy, expiring averaged 18 contract. Points a game last year. Good player.
Right. And, you know, for a team that is in legit contention, which, you know, while Detroit, I think, would like to say make the play-in in the East, and that would be really good progress for them, they're not a playoff team. I think there was a consensus that Bogdanović could be seen as that valuable for a contending team, obviously didn't fetch a first-round pick. And I've seen a lot of Laker fans, even like our friend Darius Soriano at Forum Blue and Gold and Lakers Film Room podcast, and, you know, Darius is... you know, a very good, he's very good at analyzing the Lakers and doing it from a place of groundedness. But at the end of the day, he's a Laker fan and he grew up on Showtime. And as he noted, never trust Danny Ainge when it comes to this stuff. And I get it. I think it's worth noting Kelly Olynyk, of the $12 million that he's owed next season or the following season, I should say, only $3 million guaranteed. Mm-hmm. And I suspect you're going to see him flip to a contender before the year ends for like a second or a prospect, Saben Lee, who also came over. He's a guard. It was funny, Brian. I was like, I don't know who that is. I've never heard of him.
I do only because I play in the most aggressive fantasy league, like, of all time.
Well, I was like, I really don't know who that is. And then I did a little bit of looking around. I learned the reason why. In his 2 years in the league, he's played a grand total of 6 minutes against the Lakers.
Yeah, he's been on my fantasy team. That's how aggressive and deep this league is. I have had Saben Lee on my fantasy team.
Interesting. Other interesting quirk I learned about him. In his two seasons in the NBA, averaged exactly 16.3 minutes per game and exactly 5.6 points per game. So even though he's a young developing player, in certain respects, you know exactly what you're getting.
Consistency.
Yes, coaches he is. But like, that. You know, that's obviously not a first round return. And there have been a lot of reports that, you know, the Utah Jazz, run now by Danny Ainge in the basketball department, was looking to squeeze the Lakers and looking to get two first round picks for the poo-poo platter. And maybe, as it turns out, aggressively trying to get those picks. But I kind of feel like, look, if that's really what Danny Ainge was doing, in all honesty, I think he saved the Lakers from themselves.
Of course.
If he was driving that hard of a bargain to try to force an overpay, you know, congratulations, you played yourself.
But because so I actually expected much of our, since we spent so much of our show talking about the sort of the death, or at least the coma inducement of the Indiana trade, because we don't know if it's dead. It's dead for now. There's no reason that Indiana can't decide at the deadline to trade Miles Turner.
But it's definitely done to start the season. We know for sure.
By every report, seems to be a thing that will not happen before.
Well, and also, I forgot his name, but one of the high-ranking guys.
It's the GM. It's not Kevin Pritchard, but the other guy.
Right.
He's the actual GM. Right.
Well, he said Miles Turner is going to start the season.
Right, but that's my point.
Yeah,
that could change. Guys say that, and then 2 days later get traded. It happens.
It's pretty rare, though, when you're this close to training camp to make that definitive of a statement, then flip on it.
I
pretty unusual.
I expected that much of the conversation today on the chat board, Locked On Lakers, would be about that because it's been a real issue for Lakers hands. All summer. It actually mostly was about LeBron's hair, which indicates that we were doing our job correctly. So I don't have a whole lot of stuff to pull from that, except for this. Briss from Craig Osterberg, Pacers players are always injured, not worth two number ones. Certainly Miles Turner has a real injury history there. Plus they're getting older and can't stay healthy. Hield is older than you think. Turner is 26, I think.
Turner is 26, yeah.
I disagree with that. But it gets to the issue here that I really, whether we're talking about Utah, the San Antonio thing that's been out there, or the Indiana deal, why this is so hard and why the Lakers, I think, are playing this as deliberately as they are. So we'll do that next.
Locked On Lakers brought to you by Bet Online, your number one source for all your pro and college betting needs and sports info this season. Find all the latest football league developments, game matchups, news, and podcasts. Bet Online is your continued source for all your sporting wagering information, including live betting, esports, and scores. The fastest, easiest way to check in on all of your favorite sports and events, including MLB, MMA, boxing, and golf, but also too, Locked On Lakers familia, you can look ahead to the 2023 NBA season, lay down some early action. The Lakers open the season 6-point underdogs against the Golden State Warriors on their ring night, which sometimes is a little bit too distracting for the defending champions to focus. If nothing else, maybe you can cover. Lakers getting 7-1 odds to win the West right now, only behind the Warriors, Clippers, and Suns. And LeBron James entering his 20th season, pushing 38 years old, 18-1 to win MVP. That is
pretty impressive.
Pretty spectacular. Head to the website today. Use your mobile device. Learn more about the trends in action. Bet online where the game starts.
Okay. So I am torn here. I admit that I haven't figured out the right answer to this question. And I'm not sure it's knowable. You and I both agree that of all the things that are out there, the Indiana trade, Buddy Hield and Miles Turner, is the thing that's out there that makes the Lakers better for this year. That is the fastest path
most
to
better.
Improvement that
most
we,
better.
Most better, right. We better enough, different question. But if you, of all the things that are available, this is what will improve them the most that we know about that they can go do. Reasonable people can disagree as to how much. I think it would throw them into that top six probably if guys are healthy and give them a puncher's chance against the better teams in the playoffs. Not a great one. I would probably favor three or four teams at least. Again, everyone healthy over the Lakers with Hield and Turner, but I think it would get them to that place.
I think it
puts them broadly where you are.
Yeah, I think it puts them somewhere between six to maybe four, but either way, in a position where, again, if everybody's healthy, particularly LeBron and AD, mm-hmm. you can maybe capitalize on some other team's bad luck. Maybe you find yourself in a series where the other team just does not match up well with a Davis, LeBron, Miles Turner front court, something like that. You give yourself an opportunity. I don't think there's any trade the Lakers have been linked to that put them even close to that same tier.
Okay.
Turner, I would agree. Hield. Not even close.
So here's the part that part's the easy part. Here's the part that I'm struggling with. I legit do not know the answer to, and I don't know exactly how I would handle it. I'm not trying to be waffly or whatever, but I'm just being honest. So that's not the only question the Lakers have to answer, because the other question is what's potentially out there, if we don't make this trade, better than that? That's obviously unknowable. We don't know what's going to come up. We don't know. And then the next question becomes, well, is the Hield and Turner thing better than just waiting? Potentially, you end up in a situation where in the end, if we do nothing, we have cap space in the summertime. and then the two first round picks. We can use the cap space to absorb players. We can use the, you know, it's not just free agent signings, because as we've noted, I don't love the offseason free agent list. It is never ends up being as good as the 8 months out list anyway. I wouldn't feel comfortable building just that way. But cap space can also be used for trades. If you have two first round picks, maybe that gives you a little more access to trade people into your space and whatever it might be that could be helpful. Is that path better than that trade? And then you have to figure out, Andy, which one of these things, not just for this year or even next year, if you're thinking 2 or 3 years out, like, what gives them the best chance of trying to rebuild into a real contender, even if it takes an extra year more than you would like, but you can build greater stability? That, I think, is the part that the Lakers are really, I don't want to say struggling. I think that's the wrong word.
No, I think struggling might actually be the right
maybe word. Or very hyper aware of, whatever it might be, because they can only do it once. You have one swing. That's it. The minute you break up those picks, you have less value. The minute you trade somebody into the cap space, there's less value. You could always trade that player again. But you've cut off paths. They have so few paths in front of them. I legitimately don't have a good answer for which one of those paths is the best one to take.
Well, I mean, as far as like the true rebuild, or I guess what would be considered post-LeBron, maybe post-LeBron, post-AD, I don't know. And I don't really know if there's a way of knowing anyway. So for the time...
Or even like trying to differentiate between them, where I can say, like, you know, when we rank the trade options, Indiana's clearly the best trade option. I'm having much more trouble. Maybe you are clearer minded about that. I'm having trouble even ranking these options, in part because I don't think any of them really get the Lakers where they want to go.
Well, we've discussed this before. It's that scene in Argo. This is the best bad idea that we have. And the Lakers right now are staring down a bunch of potential paths, all of which feature a lot of uncertainty and a hell of a lot of work and luck to try to end up coming out of this good on the other side. As I was starting to say, as far as the post-LeBron, maybe post-LeBron AD, that part of it, I'm sure they're concerned about it and they should be concerned about it. I'm not personally weighing that right now because, you know, a factor like when Bronny comes out.
Oh, by the way, real quick, I'm not sure this affects your opinion. I wasn't even talking about post them. I'm just talking about like sort of through the end of like maybe they're not as good this year, but the next 2 years after that are
right. But
good.
What I'm
like,
saying is, I just want to clarify. I know it's what you meant, but what I'm saying is a factor of this is depending on when, say, Bronny comes out, could affect when LeBron opts out with the Lakers if he wants to play with Bronny. If LeBron opts out because Bronny opted out, maybe Anthony Davis in 2024 decides that he wants to go somewhere else, or the Lakers feel like, you know what, Anthony Davis at age 31, I believe he'll be at that point, we're not as certain that we want to be building around him the same way. You know what I mean? Like there are so many factors in that scenario that are so beyond knowing that while I'm sure Rob Pelinka and the Rambi and Joey, Jesse Buss, all of them are concerning themselves with it, I'm saying I'm not weighing that part of it right now.
I'm very concerned, by the way. This is what Anthony Davis is going to look like at 31.
Could very well.
Very concerned.
As far as the Lakers' options, though, this coming offseason, a couple weeks ago, I laid out a list of potential free agents right now in the 30-ish mil or below possible price range. I'm not, by the way, including Kyrie Irving taking some type of discount, because there may not be a worse plan possible than trying to predict Kyrie's mood a year from now. So But some of the names that I had there were Andrew Wiggins. If he doesn't get an extension, can't get a raise. He's currently making about $30 million. Harrison Barnes, Caris LeVert, Bojan Bogdanovic, re-signed at a lower amount. Maybe Gary Trent Jr. Malik Beasley signed a less. Brooke Lopez signed a less. Kyle Kuzma, Josh Hart, Dylan Brooks, because Memphis could start becoming expensive, especially when Desmond Bain is up for an extension, which is very soon. Josh Richardson for less. Reggie Jackson, Jay Crowder for less. Seth Curry. Like, those are some of the names that I had laid out there. Some of them I think actually could be pretty good. None of them are superstars, but you're not going to get a superstar for 30-ish mil anyway unless you happen to get some type of deep discount, and I'm not going to count on that right now. Could you argue that a couple of those names are as good together as Heald and Turner? Yeah, I think you actually could. And then, you know, theoretically, you get to keep your picks and do something with those down the road, maybe that coming season, maybe whatever. The flip side is if you make the trade now, you know exactly who you have, and you can extend Miles.
You can plan, and you can plan accordingly. Yeah.
Right, exactly. So I think there is a legitimate argument for what could be had next offseason, giving you more optionality, particularly if Heald and Turner become the thing. If that becomes the ceiling of what you can do in a Russell Westbrook first deal, then for the time being, I say stick with what you have. Like, you know, I don't want the San Antonio poo-poo platter.
Oh, God.
You know, there was a period where the Knicks poo-poo platter was out there. Like, none of those to me were even close to giving up those picks. I'd rather have Russ. I would rather have Russ and the optionality.
What's disappointing is just like we had this discussion earlier in the week. We'd be like, you know, should the Lakers stop trying to, fix their mistakes? You know, did they screw up the THT thing basically from everything that came after drafting him, which was a good idea, to today? Yes, they did. And so should you stop, should you not try to undo the mistake? No, you should try to undo the mistake. You should stop making mistakes. Like they need to stop making massive mistakes. And like, just, this is the fallout. Like we'll break out of this, but like the Lakers are in a tight spot because they control so little of their own draft capital in terms of being able to count on high picks. Even if they suck, they're not going to have high picks that they can access. And, you know, Tom Ziller had a great feature, the 23 players, I think it was, best players in the NBA under 23. Lakers are never going to have people in that list because they don't operate that way. And so, you know, that kind of...
Their best chance might be Bronny.
It might be. Their best... Like, they just don't have that kind of capital. And so, like, this is the path that they're on. It is a very narrow path. It is a very difficult path. I mentioned earlier in the show, Andy, that the folks at Bet Online have a fascinating bet that you can put out on Russell Westbrook. I found this incredibly intriguing, and I am excited to talk about it next. 5.5, Andy. That is the number. 5.5. Russell Westbrook games coming off the bench for the Lakers. This courtesy of our friends at Bet Online.
There is also, too, a bet you can make. Will Russell Westbrook start game mm-hmm. one or come off the bench?
And that one I didn't find as interesting. The numbers there are heavily favored to he will start. It's a 2-11, -550, which means, correct me if I'm wrong, you have to bet $11 to win two.
More
come off the bench in that opening one, 13-4. So +325. If I had to take that latter one, I'd put my money on come off the bench just because...
To start game one?
Yes. Only because I feel like there's a scenario there. I wouldn't put a lot of money on it. But I do think it's possible. Like, if Russ really wants to show, I have turned over to the Lakers, have played, he's our starter, he's our this, whatever. Russ says, you know what? Let's do this. I've been through training camp. I see it makes more sense for me to come off the bench than it does for me to start. Like, I could see Westbrook just sort of understanding the politics. Is it likely? No, I don't think it's likely, but I can envision a scenario where Russ, very conscious of his image, because the Lakers have talked about him as a star. It's not a demotion. It's not a thing. That's Russ being a team guy. I'm just saying I can see the scenario. I understand.
Look.
Again, I'm not betting the college fund on it.
I'm not saying it's impossible that I think Russ could accept a bench role at some point over the course of the season or accept that he has to accept it. And look, maybe even accept it with the best team intentions in mind. Maybe he's not even thinking about this altruistically towards the team. He's just thinking about, look, I got career preservation. And if it gets out there that I refuse to take this bench role, you know, 15 games into the season where it clearly is demonstrated it's not working, this could really hurt me moving forward, trying to get my next contract, even just extend my career at all. I can believe that. But as far as starting game one off the bench, again, it's like that joke Chris Rock had about when he got his GED. And he's like, now you got it. I got my GED. Everyone's like, now you can go to college.
Slow down.
Slow down, Brian.
Good enough diploma.
Yeah.
Again, is my scenario doesn't have whiffs of a Pollyanna kind of feel to it? Yes, it does. Is it the sort of cockeyed optimism that makes it so my wife gets nervous when I leave the house because she's afraid I'll sell the family fortune, sell the family cow for some magic beans? Yes, it is. But I'd like to remind everyone that selling the magic bean things worked out in the end for Jack and the Beanstalk, and they got the goose that laid the golden eggs, and everybody worked out for everybody.
You know, I thought about this, Brian, about whether or not it's actually more or less optimistic for your outlook on the season to bet the over or under on amount of games for Russ coming off.
Okay, yeah, let's get to this because I just think 5.5 is a fascinating number.
Okay.
But you start with yours and then I'll do mine.
Well, you could bet the over
uh-huh.
because it means, like you said, Brian, Russ has truly bought into anything Darvin wants, even if that means coming off the bench, which should be noted, beyond status issues of starter versus bench, would actually allow Russ to be more Russ as a player.
As they say about Russ, Russell Wilson, they could let Russ cook.
Right. You could also, though, bet the over because let's just say things are going well for the Lakers. Darvin Ham decides to make this choice and Russ realizes he can't be the guy that rocks the boat. You could also bet the over because things are going to pot and Darvin Ham feels like he has to make this decision. And an angry Russell Westbrook accepts this decision. But like I said, not very willingly. You could, though, bet under 5.5 games because, look, maybe Russ plays so well with LeBron and AD, finally figures it out, gets that balance, plays off ball, sets screens, limits his threes to the corner, more specifically the left. But I will take just the corners overall. You could also bet the under because the rest of the guards don't play well enough to actually bump Russell Westbrook. You could also bet the under because
if Pat Beverly and Kendrick Nunn are hurt all the time, mm-hmm. then this becomes a moot point.
Yeah. Also because Brian, maybe LeBron and AD don't stay healthy enough and you really can't move Russ to the bench in that scenario. A lot of different ways you can take this.
A lot of different scenarios. Here's some others. What I think about this. Like, per your optimism theory, I feel like 5.5 is the wrong number because it's either going to be 30 or 2. Mm-hmm. Because sort of what you're describing in terms of the injury issues could be, but I think Russ either accepts this role and he basically plays half or most of the season coming off the bench. And so it's like 90, you know, 80. it's like he blows it out of the water in a week because, you know, he's a guy who's going to come off the bench now. Or Russ, we need you to come off the bench. Go bleep yourself. Okay. You need to go home. You know what I'm saying? Like that's the scenario that's presented to him. And he says no. And then that's like, we're not doing this. And the things have probably gone poorly enough that sending Russ home at that point probably doesn't hurt you that much. Or like you said, the injury thing, which I had not thought of as extensively as you. I was mostly thinking of like, he's either going to be forced there and say no and go home after playing like 2 or 3 games off the bench, or he's going to play 35. So If I had to choose, I would take the over.
So would I.
Because I think there is a more realistic, I think when you combine the injury thing with the voluntary thing, there's a better path to that than there is zero, which is just either everybody's hurt or things have gone so well that you don't even think about making the move.
I would bet on Russ starting the season as a starter. Unless Darvinham does just one hell of a sales job heading into this season, like really just connects
Russ
and you know, works out something where it's like, look, dude, you're gonna be playing off the bench, but you're gonna be playing an unusual amount of minutes coming off the bench. You are going to get high priority to close games because I recognize that you are making this concession as a future Hall of Famer.
Well, we don't want to break it down. We don't have time to break it down now. I was going to say the more interesting bet is 5.5 games. I pick a different number. The amount of games he finishes. That is a more intriguing, and even more intriguing than we get wrapped up in starting. I really want to know how many games he finishes on the floor. Because that's the more contentious bet with Russ. So anyway, finish your thought.
Oh, I was going to say that's the equivalent of like an album deep cut in terms of prop bets.
Oh, yeah. I'm not wrong. But
oh, no. You're very correct that one is a very big deal as well.
Whew. So this was the second to last off season podcast. Monday morning is the last off season podcast, then media day, and then it's like we're into the season, man.
I know. About damn time.
Locked On Lakers on YouTube. See everybody next time.